Hey everyone, it's Nate with just a quick heads up. This week, the Vinyl Guide is going to be giving away some records. Exciting. All right. So make sure you listen to this week's episode to find out how you could be on the receiving end of a box of some really cool records. All right, let's start the episode.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to the Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Why, hello there, everyone. It's Nate with yet another episode of The Vinyl Guide, the weekly podcast where we get together and we talk about records and vinyl collecting, products, all sorts of different stuff that interest us record nerds. Now, today's episode is going to be really cool. I'm going to be talking to a guy named Parker Macy. Now, Parker is the owner of Cream Tangerine Records in Southern California. Now, if you haven't been to Cream Tangerine Records, it's in the city of Costa Mesa, and it is really a record store worth checking out. It was one of the ones featured in the record store book, the one we profiled of the 50 iconic record stores in Southern California. Cream Tangerine Records is one of the featured shops in that, and it is really cool and unique and has a great vibe. So I picked up a lot of really cool records there and had a great conversation with Parker, which you're going to hear in a moment. Also be going through some listener email. I get a lot of your notes and questions, so we'll go through that. That should hopefully be fun. I'm also in a bit of a mood. I'm going to try a little bit of a social experiment this week, so just hear me out on this one, okay? I'm really proud about what's been happening with the Vinyl Guide. We've now been in existence for about 6 months. We've built this really strong, I think very passionate community. We have subscribers in different parts of the world. I think just about every continent we now cover, we now have listeners, subscribers in, except Antarctica. However, hopefully at some point we'll get some scientist down there that's into vinyl to subscribe to us. What I want to do is continue that growth, continue that momentum. I mean, I'm very humbled by what's happening now. I'm very happy about the passion and the positive words that I'm getting back from the listeners, which is great. It's my goal to continue to find people to join our community who are into records and who love them as much as we do. So to do that, what I want to do is try this experiment. So this week, I want to give away some records, all right? And I want to give them away to people who are sharing the word of the Vinyl Guide to their friends, to their record communities. And when I talk about giving away records, I don't mean the crappy records. I don't mean Captain and Tennille or Camille or Anne Murray. I'm talking about really good stuff. I'll open the good stuff box for this. Maybe some Led Zeppelin, maybe a Robert Ludwig Master, or some Blue Note Jazz, depending on what you like, you know. I think we could personalize this a bit. So what I want to do is for the next week, I want to monitor, you know, I'm going to be looking across a lot of the social media outlets like Instagram or Facebook. And for the listeners who are helping drive people to our Instagram site or to our Facebook page, or ultimately to the website to subscribe and download and get into the podcast. Ultimately, we want people to get into the podcast. That's the kind of the end goal. For the people who are doing that the most active, show the most passion, in a week, I'm going to reach out to those people and I'm going to say, dude, give me your address and what kind of records do you like? What kind of music do you like? And based on that, I'm going to send out a couple packages and give people a couple of really good records and really as a way of thanking them for their efforts and their passion in making this Vinyl Guide community so successful and keeping the growth going. So let's try this, okay? So for the next week, get on the horn, get on your friends. I mean, it doesn't even have to be social media. You know, you could make some flyers and drop them off at a record shop or whatever you want. You can send me pictures of that kind of stuff, you know, to my email address, Nate, N-A-T-E, at thevinylguide.com. I'm totally open for it. Consider this a blank slate and think about how you could help find other record nerds like ourselves to join our community. And hopefully I'll be sending you a package of some real bitchin' records shortly thereafter. All right, let's give this a shot. Let's see how it goes. All right, are we ready to start today's episode? I am. Let's do it. All right, I get a lot of emails from people out there across the world, and look, I really appreciate everyone who sends in questions and thoughts and just kind words. That's the majority of the type of communications I get, that and spam. I don't always get to answer them, but I do read them. And what I'm going to start doing is probably it's easier for me to just talk about them on the podcast than to actually physically write back. I hate typing. So let me read a few here. This one is from Honus in New Brunswick. Honus, what a cool name. Vinyl Guide, what is the most rare record you own in the world? The most rare record I own in the world. So let me break that up into a few different things. The most rare record in the world, that would be the Quarryman acetate. It's a single record. We talked about this on a podcast episode a couple weeks back. This is the world's most rare record, the most valuable record. It is the Quarrymen, which featured John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and George Harrison, plus a couple other guys. They recorded a single acetate disc. There's only one copy of it in the world. It's currently owned by Paul McCartney. It's probably worth around $2 million. That is the most rare record in the world. If you are saying, what is the most rare record you own in the world? Well, that would be, let me think. Oh, I know what it is. You know what the most rare record I own in the world? It is a 45 RPM record from 1986. A band called Metropolis recorded a song called Time Heals Everything. And on the backside is a song called The Raven. Now, that is certainly the most rare record that I own. And the reason I own it is because I was in the actual band. This was my high school rock band. We were quite horrible, but we had enough money to pool together and to have a single pressed. We pressed 500, and we gave some out, sold some, and distributed some, however. And eventually, out of that 500, about 300 ended up in a landfill, just because we were tired of carrying these boxes around, these records that, you know, we couldn't sell. So that is certainly a very rare record. I've heard from collectors that this record goes for well over $100 per 45. So that's my personal most expensive record that I own. Not for all the best reasons, but hey, what the hey? I guess that's something to be proud of, yeah? I'm on a rare record out there. That's nice. Now, if your question is, what is the most rare record I own that is good music? Well, then that is something entirely different. Let me think about that. I'll give you three of them, okay? And they're all jazz because there's some early jazz that is quite rare, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to have some of these copies. First one would be a copy of John Coltrane, Blue Train. His album Blue Train, that was his only release on Blue Note Records. It's a very early pressing. It's got the 47 West 63rd Street label on it. It's kind of funny because the label on one side has the registration mark and the words Incorporated, and the label on the other side does not. So at one point in Blue Note's history, they weren't incorporated. And then when they became incorporated, they changed their label. So this has one incorporated label on one side and the other side does not. So it was kind of, it's an early press, not the absolute first one, but probably an early one on the second press where they were trying to use the labels that were left over from the first press. This one, it's a U.S. pressing, obviously. It was, it's got the ears, so it was made in the New Jersey pressing plant that Blue Note tended to use in those days, and it was found in a Paris flea market for about $15. So that is a very special record. Not only is it rare and it's valuable, but it's fantastic music, and there's a nice little story that goes behind it. The other rare records I have a couple copies of Miles Davis, Kind of Blue, in mono, the first pressing. Columbia catalog number CL1355, if memory serves me correct. It's a monocopy. The musician Cannonball Adderley, his name is misspelled on him, on both copies of it. It's a six-eye Columbia. I'll post some pictures of these on Instagram if you guys like. And actually, one of these, ironically enough, one of these copies I actually got at Cream Tangerine Records in Costa Mesa. So thank you again, Parker Macy. This was a bitchin' addition to my collection. Another jazz record I have is Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. This is the Blue Note album, BLP 4003. It's got the track Monin. A lot of times this album, it's untitled, but they call this album Monin. I've got a mono copy that does not have the R or the Blue Note incorporate on the label. And again, it's a 47 West 63rd Street address. So this copy of the Art Blakey album is actually quite special. It was once owned, and it was part of the personal collection of a guy named Ira Gittler, who was a very famous jazz journalist. So those are probably the three most cherished albums I have. So I'll post pictures of these up on Facebook and Instagram. You guys can have a look at the label and whatnot like that. And if you guys have any copies that are kind of similar to this or whatnot, feel free to go ahead and share your pictures as well. Always interested to hear stories about records of this sort of pedigree. All right, I'll do one last email here. This one is from Teddy. I'm not going to read the last name. Teddy in Washington, D.C. Vinyl Guide, the other week you said you'd talk about shipping records. When is that episode? I recently got a record in the mail, and the a-hole didn't package well, and cover is bent record. Hang on. Need some punctuation here, Teddy. I recently got a record in the mail, and the a-hole didn't package well, and the cover is bent. Record good, but damn. Okay, sounds like you got a damaged record. Hey, you said you got 300 LPs to Australia from US without paying shipping. No way. I call bullshit on that. Ha ha. All right, Teddy. Well, I see your bullshit, and I raise you a go fuck yourself. Because, yes, I did get 300 LPs back from Los Angeles to Australia without paying any extra shipping. In fact, it was 314 LPs, Teddy, plus a bunch of singles. So, yeah, I did get all those records back. They were evenly distributed through my luggage and my family's luggage, and we did have 9 suitcases. We did travel quite a bit. So in my children's suitcase, right around their Christmas gifts and their clothing, they were carrying records as well. But all of them were underweight in terms of what the airline does. You know, sometimes they'll charge you if your bags are overweight. So I got all 314 records plus into the bags, shipped over here to Australia on the plane with me for zero extra dollars. None of them got broke. None of them got bent. Everyone arrived just as it left. So, Teddy, you mentioned that I promised to talk about shipping records on an upcoming episode. And that is indeed correct. So I tell you what, you know what? I'll give you a little bit of information right now. And to me, shipping records is absolutely important. When you say that you have an excellent or a near mint copy of a record, when you ship it to somebody, it needs to arrive in the exact same condition it left. There's really no excuse. It's an absolute waste to hold on to a product for 30 or 40 years, baby it, and then when you pass it on to somebody else, to just be careless and it gets damaged along the way. That is, to me, that's unforgivable. So I'm going to give you a few tips on how to ship records. So first off, if you're sending like just one or two records, you sold one on eBay or Discogs or whatever, first off, just get some firm cardboard. Get one of those record shippers. Most shipping stores or whatnot have these sort of cardboard shippers that are made for shipping records. And if you've purchased any records online before and they were sent to you, save those cardboard packages because you could reuse those. Just take your address off, put the new address on, and it's fine. Now, the reason you want stiff cardboard is to protect the corners. You don't want your package being bent by the Postal Service or UPS or whoever. Now, the people that work at the shipping companies, they're not the devil. They're just trying to get through a job, and they've got these quotas that keep getting raised. So, you know, every year the pressure is on for them to deliver more and more packages. And to meet those demands, they start cutting corners. They start throwing packages. They start being a little bit rough just to kind of, they don't mean to be jerks or anything like that, but sometimes there's collateral damage. And what you don't want is for your record to be damaged. So start with some stiff cardboard, people. Protect the corners. Now, the second big tip here is to make sure your records inside the package are immovable. You don't want them shaking around. You don't want to package a record and then, you know, be able to shake it and hear it kind of rattling around. So what I do, what I recommend you do, is remove the record from the sleeve during shipment. The reason I do this is because if there is any sort of room or movement within the package, having the record inside the sleeve can result in a sleeve split. You don't want to split the sleeves, you know, you don't want the record kind of bursting through the cardboard. So I take the record out of the sleeve and then I use saran wrap, or, you know, some cultures call it cling film or whatever like that, to wrap the record and then to wrap the record around to the sleeve. So not only does it keep the record outside the sleeve and make sure it doesn't move and it's protected, but it also protects the sleeve too, because you don't want the sleeve scuffed or scratched by the rubbing up against cardboard inside the package, right? So make sure you ship records and they're completely immovable inside the package. Now also, just take pictures before you put it in the package. Make sure that you have some really nice photos. Even with an iPhone, these smartphones, you get a really nice high-resolution photo. You want to take those pictures because when you ship it, if it doesn't arrive in great shape and you have insurance or something like that, you need to make a claim, you'll have the evidence to be able to show the condition in which that record left you. I think it's important. I think it's a wise step to be able to take those pictures before you even put the stuff in the package. Now, if you're a maniac like me and you travel around and sometimes you buy records wherever you're at and you want to bring them back on an airplane, here's what I would recommend. First off, don't bring them back in your carry-on luggage. You know, a lot of people think that if they take the record with them on the plane, then it's going to be safer. And quite honestly, I think that actually gives it more exposure to get damaged, because you're going to take that bag through customs and it's going to get x-rayed and it's going to be put in the overhead container. It's just, there's a lot of different opportunities for it to get messed up. My recommendation is just to package it well and put it in your check-in luggage. And again, just follow those rules. Just make sure that the record is protected. Make sure there's a bit of cardboard in there so it doesn't get bent, or something in your bag doesn't crush it by accident. And also to make sure that the records don't move inside your suitcase. What I use is like some of these FedEx boxes, or there's a USPS, a postal service box. They're lightweight, and you can take them and cut them directly into shape of a record and really package your records very neatly, very compact, and make sure that they don't move around during a flight. I'll post some pictures about what it looks like before I put records in a suitcase. And then, of course, once they're in the suitcase, you could use your clothes around the records to make sure they don't move, make sure they're cushioned. You don't want to do this in like a duffel bag. If you don't have a suitcase that has like the hard cardboard edges or whatever, just go to like a Vinny's or a thrift shop. You can buy used suitcases for like $5. All it needs to do is just make one trip, get your records home, and then you can hand it to someone else or throw it away or do whatever. Those are my tips on how to ship records, how to transport records. If you've got any better ideas, I always love to hear them. Shoot me a note, nate@thevinylguide.com, or you can always post it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/vinylguide. So as many listeners of the podcast know, I spent some time in Los Angeles recently, traveling up and down through Southern California and visiting various record shops. I found this one record shop, or actually I should probably say more succinctly, they found me. They reached out to me, a guy named Parker Macy. He runs Cream Tangerine Records out of Costa Mesa, California. Now, Cream Tangerine Records is a killer shop. It is run out of this trailer in this really kind of art mall. It's not like a Westfield at all. It is just, it looks like a lot of ours, very eclectic shops. I wish I got there early enough to not only check out Cream Tangerine, but also the other shops. It looked like a great place to spend an afternoon. And Parker was absolutely hospitable. I mean that in the right way. That didn't mean he's in a hospital. He's hospitable. He was a great host. And I found some great records there, including that Miles Davis Kinda Blue first pressing, which was awesome. And then I had a great conversation with Parker. We grooved on some tunes. We had to stop once or twice because some customers came in. But it is really a great shop. And I encourage you guys, if you get a chance, to check out Cream Tangerine Records in Costa Mesa, California. His shop was also featured in the book, The Record Store Book, 50 Iconic places to find new and used vinyl in Los Angeles. This is the book that we talked about in last week's episode. So it really is something that's very noteworthy. If you're in Southern California, please make your way over to Cream Tangerine Records. You will not be disappointed. All right. So without further ado, here is my interview with Parker Macy of Cream Tangerine Records. So this is Nate, still here in Southern California doing the vinyl road trip, and I'm here in Costa Mesa, California, which is in Orange County, I've just learned, and I'm here at Cream Tangerine Records with Parker Macy. Sorry about that.
It's no been worries.
Parker, this is a really interesting shop. This building that you're in is equally interesting, but let's talk about your shop here.
Sure.
Would you describe your shop to people who've never been here before?
Well, we got a little bit of everything. We got no specialty. That's our specialty, is we got a little bit of everything. We do records and cassette tapes, but we're located in a 1975 Airstream trailer. So we're only 22 feet long, and we've only got 36 rows of records inside, but we try to do the best we can with it. Mm-hmm. And it allows me to, without buying thousands and thousands and thousands of records every week, to be able to maintain a good selection for the customers. And, I just tell them to come down. I don't describe it very often, but that was fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got 36 racks, as you say, but it's quite good quality. I've had a bit of an opportunity to look through here.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
And I would say, my words, not yours, perhaps, is I think you tend to lean very heavily on blues.
I do.
And there's quite a bit of good punk rock and metal. But that's not to leave out the staples, the AC/DCs, the Rainbows, the David Bowies. So
sure.
You do have a great selection here, but there are some really interesting genres that it seemed deeper than others, at least proportionally throughout
sure.
the shop.
Yeah.
And the prices seem quite good as well. So tell us a little bit about the shop. How long have you been open here?
It'll be 5 years coming up in like a month and a half.
Okay. And is this your first shop?
This is.
Okay. And what made you decide to become the record shop guy?
Well, it's one of those fantasy jobs you have when you're a kid and you get hooked on something, whether it's, fixing pinball machines or whatever. You always want to kind of surround yourself with what you want to do. So, I used to call in sick to go shop for records. Now I get, I get to pay myself to do it, which is, kind of, I think, why everybody wants to do it. You just want to kind of keep going and play with the records all the time. So even if I don't get to keep every one of them, I'm always shopping for records, which is the funnest part of my day. Mm-hmm.
Great. So so 5 years ago you made that jump to own a record shop. Did you work at record shops before then?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so you kind of cut your teeth there. You kind of knew what worked, what didn't. Always
Absolutely.
In this particular area of Southern California?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever worked at a record shop that wasn't 15 to 20 minutes away from here. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so when you made the jump to owning a record shop, what was, I guess, maybe the hardest lesson you learned? What was the thing that you realized that, oh, shit, this comes with it. I didn't realize that.
The thing that happens that I wasn't ready for, because I'd been amassing, I got 4 or 5 copies of every Zeppelin record and stuff throughout the years, knowing that one day I'd want to, open a shop. So when I'd find those good standard titles, I'd always buy them. But the thing that I didn't realize was going to be so hard was just always finding new stuff. And so now that I have to find a few thousand records every week, that was the toughest thing. Oh, man, I've got to figure out a way to, thank God we're selling records, but I got to go find a bunch of them. And I don't want to focus too heavily on new stuff because, A, there's not much of a markup for it. And, second of all, sometimes the price point becomes invasive to a new collector. Coming up with a $32 brand new Smiths record when you could probably find the thing for $19 if you found a nice first press. It gets a little annoying sometimes when you're first starting out. So I wanted to make sure we get the older stuff.
Okay.
So
in this shop, what is the percentage of new and used?
I think, right now, because it's the holiday season, we've got a lot more new stuff than we usually do. But I think we try to stay around 5 to 10% new. Right now, we're probably around 15% maybe. But yeah, we try to stay away from doing as many of the new ones because it's just a lot more fun and a lot more profitable to find the older ones. Mm-hmm. It's tough to mark up 50% on a new record, and I just don't make it possible.
Right. And where do you get a lot of your used records at?
Well, we've gotten a lot better at advertising to our customers to bring stuff into trade here. It's a little bit of a tricky thing because we're in an outdoor shopping mall, so it is tough to get people to just pull up and have the records. I got to go out with a dolly and grab them and stuff. But we're getting a good system now of getting people to come in. And we also do, you know, I'll go out to the Orange County record show and try to find a whole bunch of that stuff at 7 a.m. before people get in there and find all the good deals. I go to the flea markets and I'll go to people's houses. We advertise online. If anybody's got more than 500 or 600 records, I'll come to your house and go through them.
So I guess the big thing that you weren't ready for, or you're doing now to sustain yourself, is just the hustle.
Yeah, that was the quickest lesson. Yeah. Okay, I can't be here 7 days a week to run the shop because I've got to go find stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not all going to wander in.
Right. So that's the majority of your day is spent kind of, you know.
Yeah, I only fishing. Here at the shop Fridays and Saturdays. The other 5 days I'm out trying to do my thing.
Awesome.
Trying to find them all.
Excellent. And in doing that, I'm sure you have some stories of some really interesting records that have come through. Can you share some of those stories about what sort of records you found that you were just kind of blown away by?
Value-wise or just fun-wise? Or
both.
Well, I found probably about a year and a half ago. It turns out it's not that valuable, but I found something that was kind of fun. It looked like a direct-to-disc, kind of almost like an acetate kind of a cutting of stuff, and it just said the Robert Johnson Alternate Masters on it. Nice. And that was really cool. It turns out it's not worth a whole bunch because they made probably about 100 of them or so. Mm-hmm. So it was made to distribute at a really low margin. But for me, a Robert Johnson, you know, really unique cut is a really cool thing that I want to keep forever, you know. So I've got that at home. I love that thing. One of the biggest records financially we ever sold was a self-titled record by this guy called Zacharias, and it's on the Darum label that you see really commonly with all the Moody Blues kind of stuff. But it's one of the really rare and obscure ones they did. And I was reading that British Record Collector magazine on a plane to Portland, and I saw it was like, you know, number 197 on a list of the 200 rarest records ever. Mm. So I was like, oh, well, that's a cool one. I've got that at home. And then I had, of course, be in Portland for a week and, like, know that it was at home sitting somewhere and I was going to have to go find it. And I think we ended up selling that one for $1,450.
Wow.
Yeah.
Excellent. And so you didn't know about it. It came in a collection.
Yeah.
And you just kind of, yeah.
Sure.
So you learned something that day.
Absolutely. Anybody that says they know enough to look at every record is, as you know, a liar. So,
yeah.
You know, every time you find something new, and if it looks intriguing enough to you, you know, sometimes it's got that magic to it that other people want it, you know.
Yeah. So you have your own collection as well.
I do.
How do you discern whether to keep a record at the shop or it goes home with you?
Well, we just cleaned this together. We were playing with the nitty gritty here. We just cleaned this License to Ill by the Beastie Boys, and that's one that I always had and I always wanted it. But then somebody asked me for it, and I thought, well, that's probably been 6 or 7 months since I spun that. I'll find it again and, you know, I'll sell it. My collection varies a lot. It goes, you know, it kind of goes in and out all the time. So, you know, if it's really, really cool blues stuff that I have to have for myself, I'll keep it every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the blues records we have in the shop, I've got one. And, you know, I keep a lot of lady singers. Any Blossom Dearie that comes in or anything, I got to keep all that stuff. Wynton Kelly, I keep it all if I don't have it. But really now it's kind of just, you know, maybe my 15 or 20 artists that I feel like I'm a completist on. I have to have everything mm-hmm. one day. Those things I'll keep, but I was looking the other day, I wanted to listen to Rubber Soul, and I don't have Rubber Soul anymore.
Mm.
And I used to have, you know, the American one and then the British lineup, so you get the different songs, and I used to kind of play it all the way through and then play the British songs real quick. And then now I realize I don't even have that record. So, you know, it's nice to give stuff away or let it free, you know, because you get the money for it and you get somebody excited. But I'll find the records again one day. Rubber Soul isn't one that I know I'm not going to see again, you know. So.
Right.
So if it's something I haven't seen that in 3 or 4 years, and I got to have that, then I'll probably keep it.
Mm.
But I've probably had about 7,000 or 8,000 records accumulated, maybe 3,000 that were part of my own collection when I first started this thing. And now I think my personal collection is probably about 600 or 700 records.
Mm-hmm.
We went down big time because I just didn't, you know, I'll get it, and I'll get to listen to it and enjoy it, but.
Well, I guess you have that now. You're kind of in the game. You're in the whirlpool now to where you don't have to have everything. You know,
no.
It'll just like Rubber Soul. You know, yeah. It'll come and go. And
sure.
It's okay to let a few of these things go because you'll see them around. Not
yeah.
to mention you're surrounded by music, you know,
sure.
most
sure.
hours of the day.
Absolutely.
Now, are you a stickler for first pressings?
No. I used to really like it, and now that I got the shop, man, if I got an original or something, you know, the Wanda Jackson's first record came into the shop, and, you know, it was kind of a reissue copy, and I had the nice $200 first pressing at home, so I swapped them out. Now I've got the $5 copy. Mm-hmm. And I, you know what? It sounds really good, and I got to spend the money on buying more records for the shop, so I'm happy with it.
Good. Do you do 78s at all?
I do collect them. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things I'm most selfish with, actually.
Right.
I'm not the biggest fan of letting the kind of customers that come through here all the time, not to talk smack on my customers, but we are in an outdoor shopping mall, conveniently located next to a couple coffee shops and an Urban Outfitters and stuff. So the people that come in here aren't always ready to be able to handle 78s, and I don't want to have to explain to everybody, because then I'll feel like I'm over people's shoulders the whole time.
Right.
You know? So I do sell them to some private collectors. The Sherwin that runs the 78 section up at Amoeba in Hollywood comes down every now and then, and he'll look through stuff and let me know if I've got something I really need to separate. And, you know, I sell them a lot of stuff as well. But, I like them, and I keep the blue stuff, and I keep the Sun records, and I keep stuff that I want. But most of them I just kind of have sitting at home waiting for somebody that really wants them, mm-hmm. you know.
Now, what are the gaps in your collection? What are one or two records that you are really hoping walk through the door today?
Oh, well, I really want... There's a Blossom Dearie record called Rootin' Tootin' Songs, and apparently it was some kind of promotion with a root beer company. If you bought a case of the root beer, they'd give you a copy of this thing. Mm. And so it really never was intended to make its way into record shops, and that's one that always kind of escapes me, and I only see it on eBay for $150 or something. I never get to. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever heard it. So I really want to hear it one day. She's one of my favorite singers. So I'd really love that one. And there's a band called The Anniversary out of Kansas. And they had a stint on Sub Pop Records and Vagrant Records and stuff. And I've got every 45, every LP, anything that they've done since or before with solo projects or other groups. But they went on this tour where they had 5 covers of a 45, and you could only get them on this tour, the 5 different covers. Mm-hmm. I've only got 3 of them. So I really want those last 2 anniversary tour 45s. They'll come up one day.
Which cities? Just in case somebody out there is listening.
It was a U.S. tour. That's okay. All I know.
So you've got 3 of the 5, but you don't know which 2 you're missing.
I don't know.
Okay.
No, as a matter of fact, I even asked the lead singer of the band, hey, what were the other ones? What, I've got these 3, and he said, I don't know, I designed this one. If you have that one, then you got the only one I know about. So, dang it, you know.
So you mentioned you share some space with Urban Outfitters, which is literally, you know, you throw a rock and hit it from here.
Sure.
Now, and they've got a bit of a reputation, I guess, in terms of, you know, selling records and what they're doing to the independent record store owners.
Sure.
But it sounds like you have a very, at least a decent relationship with them.
I've got a good relationship with them. They're my neighbor. They're about 15 feet away right there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it does, they sell Crosleys, and they sell, you know, if you want the new Adele record, I'm sure they've got it in there and stuff like that. So it does help me to not have to be able to curate, you know, the what I'm going to buy new, because they've already got all that stuff inside. I don't need to carry Adele, and I don't need to carry, you know, Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros or all the new bands, because they've got them.
Right.
So that's nice for me. But it also helps because they'll go in there and they'll see that the wall costs $60, and then they come out here and I've got one for $19.99. So it helps me a lot. It's kind of nice to be the cheaper used option outside. We really don't butt heads or compete or anything.
It sounds like you'll even point someone in that direction. They may even point someone in your direction.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I love how many referrals I get from them, just because people will come in and say, hey, you got this, and then they'll be bummed out it's $40, you know,
right,
or something. So
okay. Now, what do you think of Record Store Day? Do you celebrate it? Do you do anything for it?
I do. Typically, for the discount bins outside, everything that's less than $3, I make it all half off. And so that's kind of our nice thing. We do order the new releases and stuff, but I have learned my lesson on doing that to an extent where I have to budget for my order. Mm-hmm. I'll just do a regular order of the stuff I know my regular customers are going to want. And I'm okay with not having a big line outside on Record Store Day if it means that I didn't spend $6,000 on an order, you know, because, man alive, that stuff takes a long time to sell. I've still got, you know, 10-inch... EPs from Garbage from a year and a half ago, and I've still got all this stuff sitting around. So there are certainly some releases that you could sell 50 of in a day if you have, but you never know what it's going to be. It always baffles me. You know, we always get these calls like, hey, did you get the You know, did you get the whatever it might be? Did you get the Bruce Springsteen re-release that's going to be $39.99? No, I didn't order that because I get to make $2 on it. You know,
right.
So, you know, I think it started out with a great intention. Mm-hmm. Really cool. Support the local stores. But then at this point, you know, if I order a Record Store Day record that's going to cost $19.99, I paid $16.50 in shipping for it. So I'm just loaning myself the money until the person comes in and eventually gets it. So I don't know.
So a shop like yours, I mean, you're happy to ride the hype a bit and to have the day.
Yeah.
But to get so involved where you're investing, because I've spoken to a lot of different record stores, and they tend to have a very similar perspective in that it's really hard to gauge how much stock you're going to get from it and how welcome it's going to be from their customers.
Correct.
And most of them get stuck with a box of stuff that they can't move for months and months and months.
Absolutely. And then it's just sitting there getting marked down below cost real quick, you know, because you got to move that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's just money sitting there. And especially for a shop like yours, it's, I'm sure it's, you know.
Sure.
Cool. Hey. How are you?
Welcome. Come on in.
Oh, that's fine. Hey, we could always we'll pause it whenever you got a question. No worries.
All right.
Let's see.
Would you rather hold off for a second, or
yeah, we can. Yeah,
okay.
Sure. No worries. One, two, check. Okay, so we just had a few customers come in, and of course we need to make time for that. So you can
thank you for your patience there.
No worries at all. It's all good, and there's plenty to do in a record shop. I can make myself busy for hours in a record shop, so no problem at all. But I did notice you have a record file here for Cream Tangerine Records. You have a label.
Sure do.
You're actually making records. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, so far we've only put out 4 45s and 4 cassette tapes. Mm-hmm. And we put out actually the guy from the band The Anniversary I was talking about before. We put out his first single for his new band, the Josh Berwanger Band. We put out a guy, TK Webb, that I grew up really admiring. And then the rest of the stuff on cassette tape, we put out David Honeyboy Edwards, who's one of my favorite bluesmen.
Yep.
And then the rest of the stuff has just been local guys around Orange County that we really like, and we wanted to see their stuff you know, at least exposed a little bit more into local shops. So we pressed them on to a couple singles and try to get them exposed and try to break even.
And how do you expose them other than kind of putting them in your shop?
Well, we always have a big event. We have a big record release party, and we'll have the bands that we've kind of put together on our label kind of all play one big show. Mm-hmm. They've all done a pretty good job of bringing people out. And you know, typically, if we have a real good record release show, that we can almost break even on the release, and that helps out a lot. So we'll put them out, and then when I go around doing all of my rounds in the area with the record stuff, I bring stacks of them, and you know, I'll give them out to the local shops so they can, you know, have their first couple of them for free, first taste, you know.
Right.
And then from then on, we have a couple shops that reorder them, and if not, then we just get to expose the bands a little bit, which is fine.
Yeah. Truly a labor of love then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now tell me a little bit about cassette. Now I know I generally talk most about records and whatnot, but it's really interesting to me that cassettes are coming back.
Yeah, it's really interesting to me.
Yeah. Can you tell me from your perspective why that is?
Well, I can only really speak to this area. I know in this area here being, you know, real close to Disneyland over there, you got Burger Records, and those guys have done a really great job of, you know, it costs nothing to put out a tape. You know, it's realistically like $150, and you can get them really nicely done for 100 copies. So they did a really great job of curating a little scene in this area of the kind of lo-fi rock stuff that they put out. And so once that really kind of took back off, kids still have, you know, bummer cars with cassette players in them. As long as they clean those heads, they can still enjoy stuff that costs, you know, $1 or $2 or something. So we have about 2,000 tapes here, and even though we have a small space, 2,000 tapes doesn't take up much room. In this area, particularly being that Burger's up here, that's my only really insight into it, is that they have a really good scene. They throw huge shows, and they've got big, huge bands playing all the time on their label. So a lot of these kids have really kind of, in this area, gotten into that again.
Because I'm not really understanding the attraction to the format, like with
that
records.
Makes two of us.
Yeah. With records, obviously you've got these sonic, you know, improvements and the sound of it. Cassettes, I believe, were really more for convenience than in the car.
Absolutely.
In which case, CD kind of fills that void. So
sure.
The cassettes, other than kind of the niche or the novelty of it, I'm kind of not.
I'm 31, so I was a kid of the 80s, and I'll tell you what. that flashback of of nostalgia of looking at a tape lasts for all of about a half a second, mm-hmm. and then you're okay.
Yeah,
you know, it's for me. It's a kind of a throwaway after that. Like, oh, cool, I had that, but now I've got it on wax, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And not to be too snooty about it, but yeah, I don't really get it either. But I'll keep doing it because they keep on liking them, and then they buy records too. You know,
yeah.
We kind of can kind of get them in from the tapes sometimes.
Now, you meet a lot of people who are just building a record collection. What do you think are some of the mistakes you see people making in building their collection?
Well, I'm of two mindsets, I think, on that. You know, one, you know, if you're going to get into it, there's really the only right way to do it is whatever way you get into it, you know, in a certain thing. So if you get into it from buying, like I got into buying records for the cheap 99-cent Sinatra records that I really liked. I could get them real cheap. I could play them at home. It was cheaper than than buying the CDs at the time or the tapes. And so I got into it that way. And that's probably the wrong way to get into it because I ruined all those records with my, you know, my really bad record player, and I ruined it. I don't think there's a wrong way to get into it, though. You learn lessons as you go. Mm-hmm. The right way to do it comes later.
So probably the advice that you would give someone who's just starting to build a record collection.
Well, usually the big first question we get is like, hey, I see next door at Urban Outfitters, they've got these Crosley record players. Is that a good idea? And so, you know, I always say, probably not the best. You know, I always kind of compare it to watching a movie on your iPhone. You know, you're not going to get really the intent of it out, but you can get the gist of it, and it'll be fine for you if you're starting out. But I always recommend people go with like a kind of a lower end audiophile table, like a U-Turn or a Project or something. Those are all great, and I refer a lot of people to them. We're now starting to kind of deal for a U-Turn as well, and I really like their tables. But I just tell them to buy whatever they're going to want to enjoy. You know, people will say the weirdest things like, oh, I can't wait to listen to this on vinyl. That's got to sound so much better. And yeah, it can. But like, really? That band recorded that on a laptop anyway. You know, it's probably not the best way for you to get into it. But hell, if they're going to buy a record, I'm not going to stop them.
All right, Parker, it's been a great conversation. Anything
thanks for having
you'd
me,
like
man.
To, make sure you, your website.
CreamTangerineRecords.com, CREME, the pretentious douchey way to spell it. And thank you, by the way, for doing this podcast. I've had a blast listening to it. And thanks for coming by. It's nice to meet you in person.
Great to
and,
meet you.
And keep it up, man.
And thanks for keeping the shop open for me. I also have to add in that it's pretty late at night, well past the normal closing hours here at Parker. You've been great to keep it open so I could finish getting my kids fed and getting them off to bed, or at least in a state that my wife can manage them while I run out and do record shopping, which, again,
yeah.
She wasn't particularly thrilled when I told her, hey, guess what? But, no, thanks for making this happen.
Sure.
Thanks
for making time on your vacation to come down and say hi.
I'm glad I made the trip. I mean, this is actually a great shop. I'm thrilled to be here, and this is really interesting. I'm going to post pictures on Instagram of what the shop looks like, just
cool.
People get the gist of it, because it isn't your basic, you know, walk into store. It's not in a strip mall. This is in kind of almost an artsy warehouse type environment,
yeah.
And it's a mobile home, just kind of pulled right up in the middle of it, with just stacked full of records. So it's really cool and definitely a great place to hang out.
Well, thanks, man. I'm glad you liked it.
No worries,
keep on doing
man.
The Lord's work.
Thanks, dude. Cheers. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. Again, if anyone in Southern California, make your way over to Cream Tangerine, dig through those crates. You will find some good stuff, guaranteed. Parker, thank you very much for spending time with us. I also want to thank everyone who wrote in those notes. Teddy, Washington, D.C., no hard feelings. Of course, just kind of yanking your chain. Honus from New Brunswick. Everyone who writes, thank you very much. Also want to remind you, please start spreading the word of the Vinyl Guide, and I may be sending you some records. I'm going to be watching you guys. Make sure you send some notes to your friends. Bring on some more people into the Vinyl Guide community. There's plenty of room, and we're always into meeting and conversing with some cool people. So make sure you tell your friends, and I'm going to be sending some people some records after this week. All right, there it is, another edition of the Vinyl Guide. Again, we appreciate it. You can always reach me, Nate, N-A-T-E, at thevinylguide.com. Of course, go to our website, www.thevinylguide.com. And until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.